I would be honored to be a woman willing to speak to men, to help them to know we need you. We need you so desperately.
Thank
we need
you.
Your love and your strength and your intellect and your gentleness and your everything. We need everything about you.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and we are in search of the new compassionate male. I'm the producer of this podcast, and I'm here with the founder, Clay Boykin. Hello, Clay.
Hi, Dennis. We have Elaine Groman with us. Elaine has her own radio program that I had the opportunity to be on recently called Earth Wisdom Circle Radio. Elaine is an energy healer with years of experience. And so we're going to have a great conversation with her today on that and on men and compassion. Elaine, welcome.
Thank you both so much for this opportunity. I'm really grateful.
This is so neat because it's a time when we men are stepping into learning and growing in ways that we have not before. It seems like that we've been on this male arc of strive, drive, move, and have neglected such important parts of ourselves. And it's a time in my understanding and Clay's, and as Clay and I have discussed, when we now get a chance to step up and to deal with these, and the women are getting a chance to be our teachers and to be able to teach us to fill out these aspects of ourselves that have been either retarded or not expanded or need to be grown, or the muscles. And that's where you come in.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Could you talk about both the roles of compassion and intuition in us being able to develop this, because it is such important.
Absolutely. Thank you. What I want you to know first and foremost is this is not your first lifetime, and nor will it be your last. But what happens when we move through the veils from spirit into life and life back into spirit is we forget, because we take on this matter, this body, but we are one species, and we have female and male components, masculine and feminine components, each of us. And you used a word that I'd like you to reconsider.
Please.
It's not that you have not attempted to use this. You were entrained not to. You were taught not to.
Beautiful catch. Thank you.
Well, it's important to recognize, because our words are very important, and our words, we don't realize how linguistically our words have intentionally been manipulated, in particular through patriarchy.
Thank you.
And if we look back, and I'm working on my third book right now, so one of the things that I have delved into in the work that I have done in the past nearly 25 years of being with, I started this work by working with the dying. And I was in hospice. That's what brought me into energy medicine. That's what eventually allowed me to stand at the sacred spot of recognizing and someone recognizing that this holy, W-H-O-L-L-Y, whole journey in this body was coming to a physical end, but not an end. And so as I was learning energy medicine, literally every day I was with the dying. And it was so palpable and so profound. And irrespective of someone's belief systems, irrespective of their ethnicity, their age, the only thing that would prevent them from saying what they were saying was whether they were comatose or whether they were lucid. If they were lucid, many, many, many times they would say to me, "My husband or my wife is standing next to me," or, "You know, I see such beauty." And what we have been entrained to not do is to see the beauty of existence itself. And so how we begin to be compassionate, in which we already are, is to acknowledge the compassion that's already within us. And to begin to walk through life with deep, deep, deep appreciation. Because you and I, no matter our age or our gender, you and I can do nothing to create this body. We didn't know of the moment of conception. But in the moment of conception, this incredible atomic reaction began to occur under such profound intelligence. And in the womb of a woman, nowhere else. And in that beautiful space of what is often called the within the darkness. But we've even turned the word darkness into something to be apprehensive of. The night is dark, but it is not bad. And so in this beautiful perfected cocoon, immersed in water, there is intelligence. And we, and the ancients knew, and the indigenous elders know, that within that intelligence is the heartbeat of a woman that is the orchestrator, the conductor of allowing the signal to move through the water to tell a cell how to divide. And it is referred to in the, as the indigenous world, we are born in the first ocean. The amniotic fluid is referred to as the first ocean. And we are so negligent of that very beginning of our life. And we don't realize that if a woman is blessed to have a compassionate male with whom she has decided to bring a child into this world. And therefore her heart is beating with no fear, without threat. We have no idea what that is doing to this microscopic embryo that eventually will become a fetus, that will eventually be birthed through water, by water, into another big realm of a goddess that is called air. And we ignorantly, and when I say that, is ignorant has two meanings. Ignorant can be a not knowingness, or it can be a refusal to know, or a refusal to accept. So we have to understand from where our ignorance comes. So we are part of a living cosmos. We are not inhabitants here. We are cells within the body of creation. And none of us is wise enough to make one single teardrop or one single flower or one single anything that we take for granted. So how do we begin to understand compassion is with gentleness and appreciation for all that is. Life is alive. It is not a was. It's not a has been. It is alive.
Yep.
It is active in you and I. It is what we are gifted with that is called life.
I love the way that you have continued to use the word recognize, because if we could not cognize first, we could not recognize. And we are coming back.
I would say that's incorrect.
Please.
So excuse me for interrupting you, but a child does not understand that this is mama. Or does not understand that this body can nourish them. They're not having a conscious, volitional thought. They are responding to a vibration of care. They're responding to this exchange that needs no conscious dialogue. It does not matter whether you can understand or comprehend something. That is a part of our arrogance. That is a part of our, what separates us, is because then we start to divide the educated from the uneducated.
Let me ask a question. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes. No, please go ahead.
So when you're talking about the communication between the mother and the baby, the child, mm-hmm. and the baby doesn't have any consciousness of that's mama, but she's responding to a vibration. What came up in my mind, and help me if I'm not right here, but I think of the two tuning forks, and they're both the same key, and one vibrates, you tap it, it vibrates, and the other one starts vibrating across the room because those vibrations are the same.
Well, it's more than that.
Okay.
I can tell you, as a woman who is number, I am have a big family. I'm of 15 siblings.
Oh, wow.
I have two children. Well, there's a story behind all of that.
Yes.
It's originally 9, but my mother died and my father remarried. So there was 8 surviving kids in my family. My father remarried, a widow with 7. And then this huge blended family happened. And having given birth myself, and having had the blessing of that incredible deep bond, there's a phenomenon of our senses that we have forgotten. When a woman who is given birth hears her baby's sound, her breast milk comes in. There is what's called a letdown. The body, this body grew within this body. How could there not be a connection? But we forget that we have this connection with everything because we're one human genome. So we have this resonance with one another, but we have been taught, principally by religion, that this is wrong and bad. Because if you study why religion came to be, you will understand it was all about control. So preceding that time, many, many civilizations on this planet were matriarchal. And because a woman understands that there is a deep, intimate connection with those that she's birthed and others who have birthed. And so they will be the staunchest in making sure that life survives. In fact, in a very important and powerful medicine wheel, and I've studied the medicine wheels with indigenous elders from around the world, it is a very powerful, ancient, 10,000-year-old body of knowledge, multiple, multiple, multiple bodies of knowledge. Most people don't realize that our democracy was lifted from a medicine wheel called the Circle of Law. And another thing that most people don't know, and we take for granted, that to be a chief, and we use that term very loosely, someone could be called a CEO, a chief operating officer, a chief executive officer. To be a chief is a pledge of integrity. It is not an opportunity to show if you're going to be have integrity. It is a pledge of integrity. Without that, and if they, in their own mind, because you can never lie to yourself, even a sociopath can't lie to themselves, they would recuse themselves with honor and dignity. And so to get back to your original question, is compassion is the honest observation and appreciation of what is keeping you here, what has brought you here. When you begin to see all of life that is around us, we could not be here without it. So then compassion is the acknowledgement of how things are workable.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nothing other than that. So if you know and recognize that your mother, for instance, you could not be here without your mother. even if you didn't know her for a long time because something happened to her or there was some challenge in her life, that doesn't mean you don't have appreciation. You see, so it's much bigger than we know. We have an opportunity. I never tell anyone that they need to do something. We have an opportunity to learn how to grow into our humanity. Because we have been stripped of our humanity by force, by religion, by cultures, by beliefs in our differences of our genders. But I am not different than you in other than the fact that we have a different gender. I have the same, thank goodness, ability to feel and to understand and to interact. I have a healthy body that I can do things. But that doesn't diminish those who can't. And so compassion is the willingness to include. That's what it is. Because life has already included us. Life has never separated us from it. And it's a big IT. Intelligence.
Elaine, it appears to us that we have taken the patriarchy as far as we can. It is crumbling. It is not working. It is not working for men or women or anyone on the planet. It is not working. So we're looking for what this next stage will be. What are you seeing about that? What's your senses of what we're constructing and what this is going to both look like and how you're participating and how we can help?
Well, there is this beautiful mystery of how the cosmos has been created. And if we look back historically, we see that there has been rises and falls of civilizations. And it is often cyclical. And we have gone through 2,000 years of the age of Pisces. And this is not some fanciful made-up notion of how we are a part of the cosmos. We are riding the waves of time and space, space is not empty. Space is full of everything, every memory, every choice, every everything. And time is the movement of that. So we have gone through what we would refer to as the Golden Ages. We've gone through the Middle Ages. We've gone through the Dark Ages. So right now we're kind of straddling two places. The end of patriarchy was signaled at the end of the Mayan calendar, which it does not end abruptly like most people think. It ended at the Mayan calendar is a very, very, very sophisticated measure of time and is literally off by minutes only. And it's about 52,000 years of a measure of time. These were not ignorant people by any stretch of the imagination. And they knew that once we went through this massive change of where we are in the cosmos, we're affected by bodies of planetary bodies. We know, for instance, a woman's menstrual cycle used to be called her lunar cycle. It was 28 days following the lunar cycles of the moon. If the moon can move a body of an ocean, how is it that we think that it's not moving us? So we look at this, the little big, it's what it's called. You know, the macrocosm and the microcosm. So we are moving through time and space. And we are now fully, after 8 years of December 21st, 2020, that now we are fully in the age of Aquarius, the age of the water bearers. The women are the water bearers. The women birth life. This is what this means. We are the water carriers. We carry water in our body. And the indigenous elders understood that the most powerful person in the tribe was a woman who was pregnant or had just given birth, because her body had the capacity to hold more than one spirit at a time. And her body had the capacity to completely nourish another human being. And what they also understood was if that woman, for whatever reason, made enough milk, they would use that milk to heal people. If it could build a human body that is absolutely and completely dependent upon the people around it, what could it do to heal a body that was ill? There's so much lost information. So we're now in the age of regaining the wisdom of the women. But what we have to be aware of is that it doesn't mean we're against men.
Of course not.
No, but many people feel that they may be threatened. So it's our obligation, myself as a mother, as a grandmother, as a sister, as an aunt, as an educator, to help people, take people by the hand and say, look at how beautiful life is. Look at how beautiful your life is. And when we can learn how to gather together and recognize that every one of us is wounded, because every one of us lived through this Piscean age, lived through the belief of that might is right. And I've done a lot of research about the beginnings, and I was born and raised Catholic. And I had a very unique vantage point because my stepmother, who was married to my father for 32 years, was the first female executive in the Catholic Church in the world and brought Mother Teresa to our home. I met her when I was 17. I'm now 65. And I stood on the same stage with Mother Teresa. I went to her beatification in Rome. And that was power. But she was not always a happy woman. She was an angry woman. Because she didn't, and I might get in trouble for saying this, but what the hell?
Why? Yeah, what the hell? I'm 72, Clay 66, you're 65. What the hell? Let's go for it. Lay it all on the table.
Mother Teresa was not happy with the boys in the robes.
Yeah.
Not happy with them. And we need to understand that there was a very particular reason that religion, in particular Catholicism, came to be. It came to be in the time of the feudal lords. And when the feudal lords, you know, their land mass was great, but their gene pool was getting smaller and smaller, which meant there was a tremendous amount of psychosis. You inbreed for too long, you're going to have sociopathic behavior. We know this. And there is that desire to have people and property, all religions that are patriarchal, want people to be their property. And in fact, I'm doing another webinar about the problem of belief. When you are asked to believe something, then you have just abdicated your own intelligence. And many people, we don't have to look very far, have been willing to kill and die for a belief. But a belief is not a fact or a truth. It's an espoused rhetoric that has been beaten into people. And so I remember as a child sitting in my little church where I had to go, and I went to Catholic school. I had to go to church at sometimes every single day. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking up at this painting because we had a beautiful mural. And I thought, why are we worshiping torture? I remember it, I used to feel sick. Like, this person has been crucified. And why are we worshiping that? And it is a big lie to say he died for our sins. The man was murdered because he was a threat to the Pharisees. He was a threat to the Roman soldiers. He didn't die for your sins and my sins. We kill ourselves with our own ignorance. But people are willing to believe all of these things. This is another reason where matriarchy is coming to bring truth back.
I'm so glad that you bring that up, because that's not something I that I ever understood. Because what kind of what would a God sacrifice if Jesus didn't die to God? So what was being given? It didn't make any. It didn't make sense to me in that sense. I mean, right. I heard the words, but the words did not compute.
Well, you have to remember, many people don't even understand. And I'm very fortunate because I've had some wonderful teachers who've helped me to understand linguistics. And we don't stop and think, why are there dialects all over the place? Dialects were created to identify people. Different ways of speaking were meant to identify people. So then in time of feudal kingdoms, which literally people lived in kingdoms in behind castle walls and could not go out under penalty of death. But if you were found out outside of the castle walls, all you had to do was open your mouth and they knew where you were from. And if you didn't have papers, you were dead on the spot. Because there was so much a mindset of control. And that's what is unraveling now, because we're in the age of Aquarius. Because we're in the time of the ancient prophecies. And so I always say to people, do your best not to continue to talk about the madness that's happening. Don't fuel it. Instead say, aren't we glad we know now? Because when you know better, you should be doing better. And we cannot put our hand under a bushel and say, gee, I didn't know that was happening. So the challenge is also that the prophecy of change, which is indigenous, the Hopi prophecy, they knew this was coming for centuries. Because we've had the rise and fall of many civilizations that got too big for our britches and we killed ourselves. Because we were going against the laws of creation itself. Creation never subtracts or divides. Creation adds and multiplies. Creation doesn't, nothing ever is wasted in creation. Nothing is summarily dismissed. Humanity has done that. There's a really interesting book by a gentleman named John Lamb Lash, who wrote a book, Not in His Image. And it's about the rise of patriarchy. It's a very technically and very scholarly book. It's not the easiest book to get through, but it gives you an understanding of how and why this began. And how over time, if people grow up and are born into brutality, they believe that's all there is. And although in their heart and their mind, they might go, this isn't quite right, but they can't voice it. You know? Does that make sense?
As to me. So in this time, Elaine, in this time of division in our own country, when we're looking at what feels like that we have self-selected into camps with the chasm in between and a chance for us to be able to reconnect and to say, Can you give some perspective on how you're seeing this and what how you're addressing the sense of us being divided in the United States now?
First of all, I don't think we're divided. I think that we're in a time in which we're given the opportunity to pause and to look with dignity and honesty and with every ounce of ability to not judge, but just to say honestly to ourselves, is this workable? So we have been divided, but this division is like, okay, if something is dividing at some point, it's no longer a substance. It no longer has solid ground on which to stand. So we're watching the unraveling of that which has made people literally crazy. And it is that crack in the shell that allows something else to be birthed. That if we look at it honestly, we have division in our own mind.
Mm-hmm.
As I can speak only as a woman, there were times, honestly, I could tell you in my life that I was so hesitant to ask for anything because I didn't think I deserved anything. If I called on the phone to order a pizza, I would vomit first. It would make me sick to my stomach to ask for something. Even though my mother had died, I was the one responsible for feeding my younger siblings, and I was doing it for them.
Wow.
But I was so entrained in my thinking as a female. You don't have the money, you don't have the power. What are you spending? What are you doing? And I was 13 years old. So I'm not saying that for sympathy. It was just the reality of the moment.
No, I understand.
My mother was gone. My mother was dead. My father was working. I had a 9-year-old sister and a 3-year-old brother. To say, oh my God, how do we help them know that the world is not really falling apart? Even though at that time, in 1968, 1969, respectively, when I was 12, my brother died. The morning of my brother's funeral, Bobby Kennedy was assassinated.
Mm.
So as a 12-year-old child, all I saw was wound. It was hard to differentiate. And then 14 months later, very unexpectedly, our mother died, leaving behind 8 kids. And in that interim, you know, it's like, where do you go with this? And thankfully, where I grew up and where I still live is surrounded by nature. I would go to nature because people would say to me, well, it must be God's will. And I said, well, then I don't like that bastard. It's God's will? No. It happened. Now I want some answers. I used to stand in the woods and yell at God, who I thought was God. And I'd say, okay, what are you doing to me here? I've been talking to you for years on my knees. Now I want you to talk to me because I need answers. And then you go, oh, damn, there's that little redheaded girl again. Let's run. She's scary. So,
nice.
You know, it's this level of understanding we are our own worst enemies. And when we look at the people that are willing to do harm, that is a level of our own mind. So I don't want to fight the human mind. I want to teach the human mind. Because the mind and the brain are not the same. And will I be cautious? You bet I will be cautious. Do I know my medicine? Yes, I do. I'm a medicine woman. I know I am. I've studied with Indigenous elders. I understand what that means. So my responsibility, my ability to respond, not my duty, but my ability to respond is with compassion. I can never help. I remember learning this. I'll tell you a story. It actually happened when I was working in hospice. Do you have a moment for a story?
Please. Yes.
I was working in the hospice home. It was a facility for people. And my job was, I was the volunteer manager. So I was responsible for finding, placing, recruiting, training volunteers and helping them to understand, well, you might be sitting with someone who might be bleeding out of every orifice when they die. I had to prepare people for this. Okay. I had to make sure that they were of sound mind, that it wouldn't break them. And so one day my habit was to go and introduce myself to individuals that were just brought into the hospice home. And I was walking to this one room and the nurse was standing there and I said, I'm going to call this man Joe, just to make an epiphany. Can I go see Joe? She goes, I wouldn't go in there. Elaine's a pretty angry guy. And I said, well, he doesn't know me, so I don't think he's angry at me. And I'm going to let him decide. So I went in there and I said to this gentleman, I knocked on the door and I said, may I come in? And he goes, why the hell not? Nobody else will talk to me. And I went in there and you could tell he'd had a very rough life. He looked very haggard, scarred. You know, it wasn't just the physical disease process. It was, he'd been hard on himself. So as I was sitting there with him, just making small talk, I heard a very clear voice behind me say, tell him to forgive his brother. Tell him to forgive his brother. Tell him to forgive his brother. And I remember looking around going, who the hell's talking to me? And I ignored it at first because I thought, I don't have any right to say this, and kept saying, tell him to forgive his brother. Tell him to forgive his brother. So I looked at him. I said, Joe, do you have a brother? And this is exactly what he said. That goddamn son of a bitch. I said, oh, so you have a brother. And I hear, tell him to forgive him. I said, so do you think you can forgive your brother? And he looks at me and goes, how the hell am I going to do that? He's been dead for 40 years. So it opened this door of conversation. And we talked about, why were you mad at your brother, Joe? And he honestly could not remember. Now I should back up and say, there's a hospice term. It's a genuine hospice term. It's called failure to die, which means there is no biological or physiological reason that someone should be alive. There's no input. There's no output. Your pulse ox is off the charts. Their blood pressure, all renal, all of their systems are failing. But they're somehow hanging on. And it often has to do with a spiritual or an emotional belief that is anger. And so I knew this. And so I said to him, Joe, can you tell me why you're mad at your brother? And he said, I can't. And this crabby old fart, all of a sudden these tears just start rolling down his face. And I said, Joe, let's imagine your brother's right here with us. And let's talk to him. I'll be that gateway. Nobody's going to fight with each other because he's not physical, so he can't hurt you. And you can't hurt him. All there is love here. And he did. And we ended up speaking for an hour or more. And when it was time for me to go, I said, Joe, may I come back tomorrow? And he said, I wish you would. And I said, Joe, would it be okay if I gave you a hug? And he said, I wish you would. And I gave him a hug and he whispered in my ear. He said, you're the first non-medical person who has touched me in 5 years. And I walked out and I just said, thank you for this incredible experience. And the next morning I came into work and I went into the nurse's station and I saw the same nurse. And I said, Mary, is Joe living? How's he doing? She goes, he died last night, Elaine. And I went, oh, shit. I hope I didn't do that. And she goes, I hope you did. And I said, I think I did. And it was like, ah, this release. Mm-hmm. That's compassion. And oh, compassion is like an acknowledgement that we, if we know, we don't know. And another part of it was so, that was so touching about it is he recognized, Joe recognized that for at least 55 years, because he said he didn't speak to his brother while his brother was alive for about 15 years. So 55 years collectively, he badmouthed his brother. He told everybody what an SOB his brother was, everything bad. And then he realized he was wrong. He didn't, and he was as much to blame as his brother. If there's a blame at all, there's just a misunderstanding. It means you missed the understanding. You've missed it. It's not that it wasn't present, is you were not capable in that moment of absorbing it. That's compassion. Compassion is the willingness, so in the word compassion is the word compass. Where do you want to be? To what direction are you pointing? In a medicine wheel, in a very powerful medicine wheel that I'll be speaking about this week, called the Four Powers of the Human Self. We begin our life as spirit, preceding this animated being that I call me. I came from spirit, but needed a body to be able to live. I needed a body, as you need a body, to have experiences, to have emotions, to have the opportunity to learn. And in the human structure, we learn through our emotions. So you can only have an emotion when you have a body, driven by the spirit that is animating the body. And what most people don't realize, excuse me, is that your emotions are energy in motion. It is information coming to you only. And an emotion is only information. It is not a truth that you must hold on to for the rest of your life. Information that is coming through our sensory perceptions that says, is this good for you? Is this not so good for you? Should you move in this direction? Should you avoid that direction? But we have been entrained to disavow and to make our emotions bad. So therefore, we are the victims of how we label our emotions. And we have never been taught how to go to our mind. Our mind is not our brain. Our mind is a part of the big cosmos that says, well, what are you going to do here, Dolly? What do you want to do about this? Do you want to be with this individual who berates you? Or do you want to say, I'm sorry you believe that, and go on? You are under no obligation to hate another human being. But we believe we are, because someone has to go to battle. Someone has to be right or wrong. Even in our medical world, we have that wrong. Please don't ever fight cancer. Someone must die if there's a battle. Someone must lose. And if the battle is in one self, who else is going to be the loser? Our body is incredibly intelligent. And what we don't realize is we have, when we stay in a very low vibration, because we're entire bands of frequencies, we have been running on the lowest common denominator of energy. 100% of our body needs 100% information. If it had 100% of what it needed, we would not be ill. We would not be fighting. We would be in such an unbelievable avenue, arena of collaboration and wonderment that maybe, just maybe, sometime in the future, if humanity raises out of the muck we've been choosing to stand in, we might be privileged to go to help another planet grow. But right now, we are We are a cancerous cell in the cosmos.
So are you hopeful? Do you feel
a
sense? All right. So we're a cancerous cell in the cosmos. So we can, in my metaphor, Elaine, I see us as going through an adolescent phase as a species, and there are elements that we're trashing, and there you were trying to see and trying to grow into something. Does that at all groove with your understanding, or can you?
I wouldn't even call us adolescents. I'm not sure we've been fully birthed yet. Because, not to be disparaging of someone who's an adolescent, because every adolescent is not destructive or dangerous or unruly. You know, so we have to know we know very little. When we know that we don't know, then everything opens to us. If we're so certain of our beliefs, as I said earlier, the problem of belief is then we are inherently limited to uphold and sustain that belief, whether that belief is degrading other human beings, degrading ourselves, degrading the cosmos, degrading Mother Earth. We have to fundamentally know we have to scrap just about everything and start looking at what might be workable, and to understand if it isn't workable, then revisit it.
You know, Elaine, very early in the conversation, you talked about pausing. This is a time for pause. Mm-hmm. We've talked about it as the pause of change.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was just beautiful that we're really at that place right now, that opportunity to pause.
Yeah, because thank you. And because it's, you know, we're so ingrained in upholding our beliefs.
Right.
That if we don't know how to pause, then we will react. And reaction is, in terms of our physiology, is driven by adrenaline.
Right.
And many people are in adrenal insufficiency right now. The body is designed to make only a certain amount of adrenaline because our ancestors used that sparingly. They used it truly as fight or flight. That was not something long sustained. If you were, you'd be dead because you would exhaust yourself. So we have exhausted ourselves. But believing that there's not enough, we're not enough, all of these things. And when we pause, we give ourselves a moment to decide what we want to do. Not to just follow what has already been. And so when I talk with people, when I've had the wonderful privilege of, for 15 years, I worked with two different medical schools in Michigan, University of Michigan's Medical School and Wayne State University. And most people don't even understand what is health. So I try not to say we have to. We always have a choice. And as human beings, to our knowledge, we are the only species given that gift. So we can choose to follow people that are unkind, degrading other people, but it will never lead to anything of value. But you can do it to your dying day. But I guarantee you, the moment you're about to die, you'll say, holy shit, I blew it. I'm sorry, my Irish falls out every now and then.
I don't worry about it. We're shite friendly. We're shite friendly on this podcast.
That's right, Darwin. Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
I know.
I can hear my grandmother. A very heavy brogue. So... So, and you have to have humor about things too, you know?
Oh, of course. So
in the past 25 years, almost 25 years going on that, I've had the privilege of teaching people this, and I want you to the day I die. And I'm going to be an old woman, you know?
Oh, lovely. Isn't it lovely? Isn't it lovely to be
lovely,
able
darling.
To, yeah. What I love about, one of the things that I love about you, and I just knew I was going to love you and getting a chance to learn with you and be able to chance to sit with you is because of the depth of your experience. My God, Elaine, you have spent your time at the feet of hospice, your time at working on yourself. This has been such an incredible journey to be able to see that you have truly looked into both your intellect and into your heart and brought so much forward. I'm absolutely stunned at the work that you've done on yourself.
You know, when you're one of 15, you better get your shit together or you're going to get run over.
Can I quote you on that?
Yeah, exactly.
You can. You know, but I'm so fortunate because I have an extraordinary family. And I had an extraordinary mother. And she was only 47 years old when she died, very unexpectedly. Mm. And she taught us unequivocally that we were loved. And she showed us how to love. And one of my brothers, who was 3 years older than myself, is the one who died when he was 15. And he had Duchenne muscular dystrophy. So my brother was the first poster child in the country. So our mother, in her wisdom, she never would have ever called herself a healer, but she was. And she only went to high school. My father was a very, very intelligent man. He had a very high position at Ford Motor. He was highly respected. So I had these two dynamic individuals. And my mother taught us that we were important. And how she did that was she helped my brother was intellectually off the charts brilliant, truly. But his body was failing him. And so we're all given the opportunity to help him as he needed it without harming his dignity. Mm. So there were times I had to give I was 12, 11, 12, even younger. I had to help my brother use a urinal. So I had to do it. I had to learn how to treat somebody with dignity. And when I had to brush his teeth because he couldn't, you know, I recognize that I have a very extraordinary family. And my father was, if you looked up the word stoic, it would say C. Jack Hughes in the dictionary, you know.
Really?
He was as stoic as people could be. But, you know, he was
by nature or by training? Or both.
He was the firstborn Irish Catholic boy. His parents were Irish immigrants. It was expected that he would become a priest. In fact, when he met my mother, he had his collar. That was brave to go against my grandmother. She was so angry that she wore black and a black veil to their wedding. And my mother outshined them all. She was the walking embodiment of love. And I honestly can say my mother was an angel on this earth. And when she died, I never wanted to disappoint her. And I always say to people, do you realize what you have? You have an opportunity to say anything. You have an opportunity to ask for forgiveness. You have an opportunity to forgive because your mother's here. Do that for yourself, please. There is, all we have as human beings is time. And that time will tick by whether you say it or you don't say it, whether you do it or you don't do it. And I want to do it. I want to get my hands dirty in the dirt. I want to play with worms. I want to thank God that this miracle of this earth can grow something that I can eat and it becomes my body. This is something I look at. There is nothing that comes in front of me that I don't know is teaching me something. Whether it's humility, kindness, patience, helping, whatever I can do. I don't want to waste this life. And so I've learned how to step into positions where I can help someone see their own light. And to know when I'm working with someone who's really ill or sad, it's like, okay, we all know we're on a journey. There's not a single one of us getting out of this life alive. So what can I do to help you know who you are? And in so doing, I will know who I am. And that's compassion.
It's, Blaine.
Yes?
I just want to tell you, because I could go on for, we could go on for hours. You have, God, what a fount you are, and how much I have imbibed of the delight of you and your wisdom and your compassion. Thank you for joining us today. Clay, is there anything at the end that we want to say?
Elaine, will you come back?
Anytime. And please, I would be honored to be a woman willing to speak to men, to help them to know we need you. We need you so desperately.
Thank
we need
you.
Your love and your strength and your intellect and your gentleness and your everything. We need everything about you.
Thank you. We're in. We're already in completely. So we're there.
Oh, buddy, you don't know what you're in for yet.
Oh, yeah, we do. Oh, yeah, we do. We have met you. We just spent the last we just spent the last hour in orientation, and believe me, we know what we're in for.
I do have a couple of questions.
Yes, please.
Well, first of all, how would somebody get in touch with you?
They could email me at egrohman55@gmail.com. Thank you. And they can go to my website, which is elainegroman.com.
The other question I had was, you're talking about a workshop that you're doing soon?
I have webinars that I do.
Webinars, yes. Yeah.
Coming week, I in fact, you should have just gotten it today. I just sent it out a little while ago before we began. I think you're on my list. If not, I'll make sure I get it. If you don't get it, a newsletter from me. My business name is InLight LLC. And so you'll get a newsletter from InLight. And in it, it has the next three webinars that I'll be doing. And part of the proceeds of, so I charge for it just a minimum amount, but the part of the proceeds go to an organization that I'm on the board of. It's called Cares of Farmington Hills. And we're feeding 600 families a month. And that's not ending. It's going to keep going for a long ways. And we're creating a campus of hope on a 10.5-acre former Roman Catholic parish that was closed. And prior to COVID, we had AA groups there. We still do. We have had Vietnam vets. We had vets of all wars. We had women, infant, and children. We had people with special needs. We have a free food pantry there. We just opened a SNAP store, which is a place for people that have bridge cards so they can get supplemental things. My job is to be a fundraiser. I'm working very hard to try and find money. In the spring, I'm hoping to put in a hydroponic garden and another garden, a greenhouse and a physical garden so that we have food for people. And most importantly, I want to get people's hands in the dirt. Mm-hmm. I want them to see the connection between life and living. And life is working in your favor if you get all the other crap out of the way.
What a perfect ending. Thank you, Elaine. Clay, thank you so much for inviting me along and being here. What a gracious opportunity to be able to live and learn in a joyful time with both of you. And for everyone that is listening, we will see you next time on In Search of the New Compassionate Man.
Well, feel free to call on me whenever you need a crazy Irish girl to give you a few tips.
Well, I'm serious. There's a lot of talking in the air that goes on. And a lot of people, that's what they need. They need a place to connect. And a lot of times it's I'm speaking to myself, you know, it's not too deep, but that's their grab hold point. But you can only have so much of that. You have to go deeper. And to be able to bring that into the program is so valuable.